I'm speaking today with Brad Neal, who is the Democratic candidate in State House District 150 up in North Harris County. Brad, first question I'd like to ask, why are you running for this office?
Charles, I'm running to bring representation to North Central Harris County that respects all of the citizenry up there and residents, and which serves with more distinction in the legislature than has been done for the past 10 years or so under Debbie Riddle's tenure. It is a task. It is a duty, an errand, as I see it, to do it. We need to promote candidates in every race, even those that for those districts and those seats that have been traditionally Republican. Some may consider these seats, these races, to be long shots, but you've got to play to win. And I think now, as this campaign season is developing, my race seems ever more less of a long shot, and the prospects of a victory become more and more favorable.
Okay. Well, I mean, you did run for this same seat 2 years ago, and in an obviously less pleasant year to run as a Democrat. You know, what would you say you learned from that experience?
Well, one thing I do want to say, and the numbers will bear this out. 2010, of course, was a high watermark for the Tea Party, for that component of the Republican and conservative body. And it was a human wave, and it hit all Democratic candidates very hard. After the fact, I looked at the data, and I compared 2008, when I also ran, with 2010. I did that not just for my District 150, but I looked at all of those races in which there was a contest between a Republican and a Democrat, regardless of who won or lost, regardless of who was the incumbent or the challenger. And as a percentage, District 150, my race in District 150, lost the least ground compared to 2008 than any other House district. Meaning, the all Democratic incumbents and challengers, all Democratic races, all races in which there was a Democratic candidate, staggered back in 2010, including ours. However, we staggered back the least. Now, you can say we didn't have that much to lose. You know, we were only going about around 30%, and we fell back to like 28%. However, that resilience that our district and our campaign and our race displayed, I think, speaks to several factors. Factors that will come into more of a fruition and help us this time around, which would include the general demographic shift in our area, an increasing population, actually an increasing population density, as I said, a demographic shift that would tend to bode more well for Democratic candidates, and also our message, the message of my campaign, which I tried to keep positive. And focusing on what I believe to be the salient, pertinent issues that would be beneficial to all. It also, I think, speaks to somewhat of a fatigue, if you will, amongst even some traditional conservatives with the representation that we've had. I catch this also somewhat anecdotally, talking to Republicans off the record, if you will, from our area, who also recognize that they can do better.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about some issues then. I mean, obviously the 2011 session was dominated by the budget.
Yes.
You know, the news since then has been a lot better in terms of revenue, but, you know, they cut quite a bit in 2011, starting prominently with education. You know, what do you want to see done with the budget in 2013?
Well, if you will, Charles, let me take a step back to the 2010 campaign. And I ran with the impending budget crisis and addressing the impending budget crisis as my main campaign issue. My opponent, who is my opponent now, was running on her anti-immigrant stance and the other touchstones of you know, her ilk and her party. I recognized and I tried to raise the issue and have us look at it head on. It was a $20 billion deficit freight train that was heading down the tracks. And yes, it did hit us. And it had, as you said, and as we all know, it had great impacts on education. As a parent of children who are in public school, I saw it. So, like many parents, I have seen firsthand the effects of these cuts. I mean, so many times. Budget cuts at any governmental level are, though they are all real and have great effects, they are not readily visible to the populace. But this one was. I mean, kids come home with stories of overcrowded classrooms, this or that teacher is not there anymore, reduced programs. We all saw traffic jams around the schools because of the curtailed bus service. So it was it was real, tangible, visceral, and so maybe that's what it takes sometimes for us to realize what these cuts mean. So, moving on to 2000, well, that's the past. We can't do anything about that. Now let's move forward to this race and this next upcoming legislative session and the new budget. The root of the problem of the budget deficit was Governor Perry's initiative of the margins tax in 2006. And at that time, even the Republican comptroller, Mrs. Strayhorn, she warned Governor Perry and Dewhurst and Craddock. And she told them all that this plan does not work. It will lead to deficits. It will lead to, as she said, quote, draconian, end quote, cuts in education and health. And she used several very strong words, especially coming from a very well qualified and experienced public servant, as she is, she was essentially absolving herself of any responsibility. When you look at that history and that 2006 letter, which I see as somewhat of a smoking gun, you realize that Perry and the Republican leadership went into this eyes wide open. They knew what was going to happen, and it did happen. So it kind of makes you wonder, what was their intent? I mean, we can speculate, but in any case, I do not believe that we're going to get out of these budget problems until we restore our pre-2006 tax structure. Step one, okay? Go back to the franchise tax, away from the margins tax, okay, which is not popular with small business people anyhow. So, being confusing and whatnot, let's go back to that. If we can go back to that revenue structure, that will, I believe, that will be, it won't be an instant fix, but it will put us on back on the right track. Another thing that I propose that we do to enhance state revenue is, and this is considered to be a poison pill and somewhat of a big, a bold move in Texas politics, but I truly believe that we need to raise our severance taxes to be on par with our neighboring energy-producing states. If you look at Louisiana, Oklahoma, and New Mexico, we charge producers, royalty owners, less than any of those for oil, for gas, and our severance tax on coal is 0%. Now, if we simply raised it to be on par with even the lowest of our neighboring states, it is not going to hurt our energy industry economically. It's not going to put a chilling effect on the industry. And it will, I don't have a hard number right now. That's something that I do need to come up with. But it will undoubtedly help our state coffers. And it's, I think it's a very, very defendable position, and it cannot be argued against. I mean, the producers of energy, who we all depend on, we owe them the credit for having the technology and whatnot to extract this mineral wealth, but they also have a duty to help pay for those state funded systems that help facilitate their business, the public roads, the education that gives them the workers, and so forth. And that's recognized already by the fact that we do have a severance tax structure. It's just that I'm saying that we need to make it on par and stop this, what must surely be a many billion-dollar a year giveaway that's lost revenue that we could realize.
Okay. In addition to public education, healthcare took a big hit. The state has deferred a couple $1 billion in Medicaid payments. And of course, sort of parallel to that, they went after a lot of family planning, made a lot of cuts there. And as we well know, they're working to defund Planned Parenthood. Give me sort of your overview of all this. What do you want to see done?
Well, number one, the governor needs to be compelled or otherwise overruled into taking all available federal funds without any ideological strings attached. I mean,
are you speaking to Medicaid expansion?
Correct, with the Affordable Care Act. Yes. We don't need to be playing political football with people's health. Yes, we all have areas, we all have opinions regarding the act and areas that it may be improved upon, but it's a good start. And the governor has really very callous disregard for the citizenry, especially those who rely more on public health services. Like I say, a callous disregard for their health and welfare. In rejecting those federal funds. So, I do support the funding of women's health services and various birth control, pregnancy control, family planning, I should say, services rendered to everybody to so that we can make sure that every child who's born into a family is going to be well cared for and appreciated upon their arrival. I'm a parent of 7 kids, and I feel very blessed by all of them. I do recognize that people can be in situations, however, wherein they are not at a stage in life where they can best care for their children. And maybe they should defer that to a little bit later time when their situation, their lot in life is a bit better.
Okay. your opponent is probably more identified with legislation relating to immigration than anything else. You know, she was one of the sponsors of the so-called Sanctuary Cities Bill that did not make it through the 2011 session, but is sure to has been named a priority by Senator Dan Patrick for 2013. What's your view on the Sanctuary Cities legislation?
Well, again, as my position is unchanged from my position in 2010, and that is that I welcome all contributing residents of the state and our local area to reside in here without fear of official oppression, without fear of discrimination, without fear of intimidation, to reside, to contribute, to work, and to live peacefully with their neighbors. I was very vocally opposed to her, to my opponent's 2010 platform position, or campaign position, of wanting to bring forth the Arizona-style laws to Texas. I was very clear in that. I was alone as a candidate speaking out against this against a similarly intended batch of city ordinances that was proposed for the Tomball during a city council meeting in October of 2010. The mayor allowed everyone who had who wanted to say their piece, and I was one of the people who did, and I spoke out against that. I said it was unjust and it was unnecessary and untimely. Thankfully, that city council agreed with that position, and they voted down all those measures. Thankfully, also, the Texas legislature in the last session did not carry on the measures that Representative Riddle submitted and authored. So I am definitely against discriminatory measures. I'm against casting local police as immigration officers. And I go back to the fact that this, despite all the semantics of calling people illegal aliens and such, we must all remember that this is an issue of federal civil law. It is not criminal law, it's civil law. It's not state law, it's federal law. So it is, I think, a misnomer. It's an incorrect statement to say these people are illegal aliens. Again, if a person is residing peacefully, not causing trouble, then let them be contributing, let them stay as contributing members of our society.
Okay. Since you mentioned discrimination, you're aware, of course, that the D.C. court ruled that the redistricting map was illegal because it showed discriminatory effect and purpose. We are now in the stage of waiting for them to come up with some remedy for this. Actually, it'll be the San Antonio court. But what is your opinion? Let me limit this to, what is your opinion of the district that was drawn for you, District 150? How did that change, and what, if any, changes do you think should be made to it when the courts address this issue?
Okay. 150 did get changed, and by design or by coincidence, the change was basically a lopping off of the eastern end of it, in which we did very well in 2010. And the acquisition of some precincts on the western side that were more what would be considered reliably Republican. But I don't think it didn't change the dynamics greatly. A little bit, but not greatly. However, looking at it geometrically, if you will, geographically, if you will, it's fairly contiguous. If you look at 150, it's one of the, as it is now, it's one of the least gerrymandered of any district. So I'm taking it as it is. I'm going to hit the ball where it lies. I don't propose that we complain about it, but it is noteworthy that its changes did relinquish those precincts in which we did best.
District 150 is, you know, a dynamic, fast-growing area up in North Harris County. There's a lot of unincorporated Harris County, a lot of small cities up there, like Tomball, as you say. Are there any specifically local issues that you think need to be addressed in the next legislature that you would want to champion?
Well, it is the, as you said, it's quickly growing. It's a bedroom community, if you will. And the density, the population density is going very fast. I would support, as a legislator, I would support the creation of a management district along 1960, which some of the business leaders along 1960 have been asking for, but heretofore have not had the legislative support necessary to enact. They want to do this in order to be able to put a very modest additional sales tax to pay for some dedicated police protection along that corridor. Similarly, on a case-by-case basis, I would support the creation of similar districts in other corridors up there, possibly 2920. Again, if the local business community and residents wanted it and asked for it, I would not do as many others have done and just simply rule it out and say, we need no new form of government, okay? And just based on that ideological stance to rule it out. No, I don't take that position. I look at it from a case-by-case basis. And so now with regards to incorporation, that's something that's been brought up in Spring and Klein. There's various moves afloat to some people call for the incorporation of Spring or Klein or a entity called Spring Klein or Klein Spring. Again, you know, on that issue, I'll have to say, I'm undecided on that. I live in an unincorporated part of Spring, and you know, I got to admit, to some extent, I do like living in an unincorporated area. It gives me a little bit more, freedom. Me and my family, you know. If I want to have a burn pile in my backyard, we'll have a burn pile in the backyard and whatnot. So maybe I'll kind of like that country living a little bit. But I do recognize also that the area, the density is growing. The density is increasing. The area is growing. And we can't necessarily maintain that unstructured lifestyle forever. So potentially I am supportive. It has to be executed in the right way, proposed in the right way. But I could be supportive of such a measure to incorporate Klein Spring and or Klein Spring.
Okay. And to sum this up, as someone who's run before and running against a notorious incumbent, why should people vote for you this November to be the next representative in House District 150?
We need new representation. My opponent has been there 10 years. She's had her turn. I would say her party's turn at dominance of state politics, they've had their turn. We need a fresh attitude that is constructive, that is more respectful and representative of the people and the attitudes and values of our fast-growing area. Again, we are not a small, upscale, gated community anymore. We are very diverse. District 150 contains many relatively new, what would be considered starter home neighborhoods. It is a very middle class area. It's ethnically diverse. And that can be a strength. It is a strength, and it can be more of a strength if it is more more appreciated. Again, I think I can serve with positive distinction instead of negative distinction. I have, if you will, real world background. Okay, I've been working a degree in engineering and been working in the engineering and technical field for 20 years now. So, you know, I do have my finger on the, I have an appreciation of and keep my finger on the pulse of the main driving industry for our area, the petrochem industry. And, but I do also maintain an appreciation of the issues of importance to young families. My family is young. Actually, it ranges from, you know, college age to infant, but you know, I still know and appreciate the challenges of young families and parents of school children. And again, I've got that with my life experience. I think enables me to understand the concerns and issues of the people, to assess what are the salient factors in any issue. I stay away from demagoguery. I think that I proved that in my earlier campaigns and now too. So, and that is why I believe that that we need to change, and that's why I respectfully ask for people's for the vote in November.
Okay, Brad Neal, thank you very much for talking.
Thank you, Charles.